first year finishing up the year.
On June 18th, 1958, something very unusual happened. In the Knesset, in the Israeli parliament, in the middle of the speeches, there was a pause. There was a moment of silence, which was observed. It is recorded in the proceedings of the Knesset that Chavri HaKnesset, who were in the gallery, in the plenary, they all stood up in silence. It was a moment of silence, a dedication to recognize an event that was taking place that day in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh. And that was the burial, or the reburial, of the remains of the late Gaon, Rav Menachem Zemba. Hashem Yikom Domo Zchus Yagon Aleinu. Rav Menachem Zemba, after having passed away on Shabbos Chol HaMoed Pesach years earlier, 15 years earlier, being gunned down, running between two buildings in the Warsaw ghetto that was up in flames in the middle of the uprising, was buried there in the ghetto and reinterred 15 years later in Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh, and was recognized in the Knesset with a moment of silence. Rabbi Nachum Zemba was born in 1883, but his father passed away when he was 9 years old, and he was raised by his grandfather and intellectually in the context of a chabura of Ger Hasidim. He was unquestionably recognized at a young age as an Elui, as a genius. In 1901, he marries a young woman by the name of Mindel Ziederbaum. Her father was a successful businessman in a small suburb of Warsaw called Praga, Praga, not to be confused with Prague. And this young man is recognized and known hereafter as the Prager Elui, the genius of Praga, Rav Menachem Zemba. Rav Menachem Zemba is writing Chidushei Torah. He spends the next many years, almost 20 years, taken care of by his in-laws, where he is writing and learning, and he begins to correspond with some of the greatest Torah personalities. He had a close friend, Rav Avram Leuftever, I believe that's the way to pronounce his last name, who was the son-in-law of the Or Sameach. They exchanged a series of letters which were published called Zera Avram. Shortly thereafter, in 1921, he publishes a small work on the Malacha of Hutza'ah, carrying on Shabbos, called Totzos Chaim. By this time, he is exchanging letters with Gaonim all across Europe and is recognized as an up-and-coming genius. Interestingly, his father-in-law passed away. He had to take over the business. The business went south. And then, if you can imagine what the economic climate was in 1930 in Poland, it was not good. And Rav Menachem Zemba, the business failed, and he had to take upon himself at long last something that he had eschewed, which was a formal role in the rabbinate. So in 1935, he becomes a chaver of the Vad HaRabbonim of Warsaw. And he is recognized as one of the greatest minds and warmest hearts of the generation. It's kind of like a fusion of genius of intellectual learning, but also the warmth of the world of Hasidim. He has a student. He wasn't schooled in a formal yeshiva. He has a student who writes a small biography of Rav Menachem Zemba, which appears in this volume called Ela Eskara. Ela Eskara is a collection of small biographies of great Gaonim who were lost during the war, were killed by the Germans. So this is a picture of Rav Menachem Zemba. You see from the volume, this is the second volume of Ela Eskara. It's a 7-volume encyclopedia. And the entry of Rav Menachem Zemba is written by a student of his from before the war. A man, here I'll show you this, it gives you at the beginning from where he was born till the end. It says the end, Hamaymar Hazeh Nechtav Al Yedei Harav Simcha Elberg. So if you want to see, there is an abridged biography of Menachem Zemba, it's right here. He points you at the end that there is a full biography of Rabbi Menachem Zemba, which you can get online today on Otzar Chachma. It's called Rabbi Menachem Zemba. It's the biography of Rabbi Menachem Zemba, authored by a man by the name of Shmuel Rothstein, who authored this work in 1948, published by Netzach, which I could share with you pieces of that if you'd like as well. So this is the biography, and it's written by a man by the name of Rav Simcha Elberg. Simcha Elberg also is playing another role at this time, in addition to writing about his teacher, his Rebbe, Rav Menachem Zemba. He is the editor of a magazine. Take a look on your first page. The magazine of which he is the editor right now, when this is being published, you see this publication that you're looking at in front of you is in 1958, spring of 1958. HaPardes, the very well-known rabbinic journal. The editor is now Rav Simcha Elberg, Brooklyn, New York. He has a Chicago connection. I forget exactly what it is. This Choveret, which is in Shnas, Shana, Lamed Gimel, Choveres, Zion, Nisan, Tufshin, Yud, Tes, HaTochen, you see on the top. That's right. You see, and there were others also. The original editor of this, Rabbi Hapardes, who was the first editor of Hapardes, was in Chicago. Years ago, we quoted another section of this where we had another couple of Chicago connections. If you look on the page, you see a photograph here. On the right side is the Briska Rav, Rav Yitzchak Zev Halevi Soloveitchik, and in the middle, walking with him, is Rav Menachem Zemba. Who is editing this journal? The student of Rav Menachem Zemba, this Rav Simcha Elberg, editor and publisher. What is the first section here? Mered HaGetto Bavarsha, Rav Menachem Zemba. The Warsaw Ghetto Uprising and Rav Menachem Zemba. Turn the page. Rav Simcha Elberg is not happy. Here is the piece. Mered HaGetto HaVarsha'i, the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, which he says happened in 1942. It actually happened at Erev Pesach of 1943. Atir Safrut Hu Lamidai, there is a lot of literature about this, and it keeps growing. Not that they have new events to say, but there's more to say about the bravery and the greatness of those who were involved in this situation. He says, what about us religious Jews? Should we, ha'omnom, second paragraph, ha'omnom gam onu ha'yehudim ha'datiyim ha'mesoratiyim, should we, the traditional Jews, go out to join this circle of celebration of those who joined in the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising? If we were there, and parenthetically he notes that it's logical that there were religious Jews who were active in this, good. But if not, he says, there's no shame of not having participated in the uprising. Ki es, quote, kedoshenu ha'amitiyim. Al lanu lechapes dafka b'lahavos merid varsha. Our true kedoshim, you don't have to look just in those who participated in the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. We're going to come back to this train of thought later. But what really gets him worked up is the article that he came across, which is referenced in the footnote. It was published in Judaism, a quarterly journal of Jewish thought, in 1958. You see on the last paragraph on the top right, Kosev ani shiros elo. I'm writing about this issue. You know why? L'ragli zeh shekvar melefnei shanim achados, a little while, a couple of years ago, we started to hear stories about the revolt. L'schov es shemo shel mori v'rabbi agadol Rabbi Menachem Zemba Zatzal, to drag the name of my Rebbe, Rav Menachem Zemba, into this description, ulataro, and to describe him, kivyachol, so to speak, ke'echar harabonim de Varsha, of one of the rabbis of Warsaw, shotziu psak halacha lamaisa lo'udeid es hayehudim lamered, who came out with a rabbinic ruling to support the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. He says, when I heard this, says Simcha Elberg, Miaoz Kori Sipur Ze Hudhamti Admaud Libedusa Zu Neederes Kol Yisod, to this fallacy which is lacking any foundation. How could this be? Impossible. And the fact that people have tried to co-opt, he quotes this Dr. Israel Alfenbeim, who wrote this article in English, so to speak, he describes how somehow Rav Menachem Zemba was one of the leaders of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. Impossible. Can't accept it. Had this Dr. Applebaum known Rav Menachem Zemba even from afar, he knew this would be impossible. Had you understood Rav Menachem Zemba? Did you know Rav Menachem Zemba? This is impossible. This article is followed up by several other articles in Hapardes, including an article by none other than the Gaon HaAdir, Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, where Rav Henkin piles on, not mentioning Rav Menachem Zemba by name, but piling on this notion that the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising and uprisings in general are not something to be sanctioned by halacha, and they cause the instant death of many people. He says hundreds and thousands of people. And it can't be that we would count on such a thing. The stakes are high. The stakes are high because it's a sensitive issue, as we're going to get back to in a few minutes. But to understand why Simcha Elberg is talking about this, because he says, you're talking about my Rebbe. My Rebbe, the Gaon, Rav Menachem Zemba. To understand Rav Menachem Zemba, you have to remember what we said before in terms of his rabbinic stature, one of the greatest rabbinic luminaries of Europe. Rav Menachem Zemba, he had written 10,000 pages of Chidushei Torah that he had in the ghetto. He had an entire commentary on the Yerushalmi and an entire commentary on the Rambam. I once had the opportunity to speak about Rav Menachem Zemba, Hashem Yikalem Damo Zechuto Aleinu, to a group of students in one of the day schools. So I asked one of the students in the class, could you bring up a textbook? So they brought up dutifully one of their big, it was eighth grade social studies textbooks, you know, one of those thick textbooks. So how many pages are in the textbook? 800. So I said, let's bring another one, and another one, and another one. By the time we stacked up 10,000 pages. Do you know what that looked like on the desk, on the teacher's desk in the eighth grade classroom? Could you imagine? 10,000 pages of Chidushei Torah. I'll share one Shtikl Torah that I love with you here just on the next page, because we mentioned the Zecher the Tzaddik, which you mentioned Shtikl Torah. Rav Menachem Zemba here in this letter to Rav Leuchtever is discussing an issue regarding the kavana that a person, let's say in this case, it's a kohen who's doing a part of the avoda, that the kohen has when he performs the service in the Beis HaMikdash, what is that person's kavana? So the context here is that we know that there are different stages in the performance of the avoda in the mikdash of a karbon. So the first thing that happens in the avoda, so to speak, or the pre-step for the avoda, is that the owner designates, consecrates something for the karbon. So let's say it's an animal. So the owner will consecrate the animal and say, Hare zu ola, or Hare alai ola, if the person wants to bring an ola. Then they bring it to the base of Mikdash. The owner theoretically could do the shechita, but let's assume right now that the kohen does it. So the kohen is going to do four avodos that relate to the service of what we call kapara, the accomplishment of the korban, which relates to the blood. So the kohen first will do the shechita, which separates the blood from the animal that gives it the kedushas korban. Then he'll catch the blood in a cup. He'll then walk the blood in the cup to the mizbeach. Then he'll sprinkle it. That's called the zrika. And that ends the first stage of the korban. Then, it depends on the type of korban. If it's an ola, the entirety of the animal outside of the skin is going to be burnt on the mizbeach. If it's another kind of korban, only part of the animal will be burnt. So let's say you take the emurim, the guts of the animal, and you put it on the fire, on the wood. That's called haktara. So the Mishnah says in the beginning of Zvachim that when the kohen does the avoda, that the mikdash is so sensitive in the way that we connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that even a person's machshava, even a person's mind, will determine the acceptability of this karbon. And that if the person has what's called a machshava of shelo lishmo, they try to change the thought of the direction of the karbon. And the Gemara talks about the name of the karbon, meaning the identity of the karbon, from, let's say, an ola to a shlamim, two different kinds of karbonos, or, you know, Jack's karbon to Sam's karbon, that's called shinui bailim. All of these can be problematic for a karbon, depending on what kind of karbon you're bringing. So in this context, we have a discussion. That's what Menachem Zemba is talking about here, is what about the intention of the kohen who's doing the service when he takes the the emurim, the fats, and puts them on the mizbeach? That's the question. That's the discussion here. Is the machshava b'shas haktara? So Menachem Zemba comes up with a brilliant idea to explain the Shita of Tosfos, to explain a fundamental difference between the first section of the karbon and this section of the karbon. So take a look on the left side in the bracket. It's an awesome hara. And it's a good idea to have this Shtickle Torah in your pocket in case you're, I don't know, you're on a plane somewhere and somebody asks you, wait a second, I heard that Tosfos holds that there's no din of Shinoi Hashem when it comes to the Haktara. You're going to tell them, I know it's very basic Shtickle Torah for a Menachem Zemba, but it's going to answer all the problems. Just from this bracket, it could happen. It's ever happened to you before?
No.
Not yet.
I don't want to brag.
Thank you. So he says, in the bracket on the left-hand column, it's so geschmack. He says, look at Tosfos, second line, Demaisi Kro, they quote a pasuk, L'shem Zevach, Dainu Shinu Kodesh, L'maisi Nami Kro, L'shem Zoveach, Hainu Shinu Bailam. Why? So he says, "Deshinui bailim lo shayach lefarish b'shas haktara." Says Tosfos that there is a difference between the thought process in the first four steps of the avoda versus in the step of haktara, of burning the limbs. The first four steps, if you think that this is going to be shmerel's karbon instead of beryl's karbon, you have damaged the karbon. And depending on what kind of carbon it is, it may be totally ruined or only lo ol l'bailam l'shem kolba. But that's not true for the haktara. Why? So Menachem Zemba says, I'll explain it to you. Because there are two aspects of every carbon. And this goes to a general fundamental point in Lamdus, which is when you look at a halacha in Jewish law or a concept, how do you understand it? Do you just take it at face value and say, well, that's the regulation, that's the rule? Or can you say, wait a second, there's something deeper. There's a conceptual underpinning. And when you do that, you realize that sometimes the same word, the same law, may actually mean different things in different contexts. So, for example, if I told you, could you define the word house? What would you say is the definition of the word house? Place you live, a dwelling. Well, what if I told you the house of Rothschild? Does that mean the dwelling in which he lived? No, it means, what does it mean?
The legacy.
Right, the family. So the word house can mean two totally different things. So when you say a halachic concept, you have to dig down. So Rav Nachum Zemba says, let's look at each halachic concept. The first four, the Avodas Hadam, those relate to the kapara, the accomplishment of the karban. Well, who is accomplishing the karban? The person who bought the karban, who brought it to the Beis HaMikdash, the bialim. Haktara, says Rav Nachum Zemba, since it takes place after the zrika, it no longer is a prat in the karban. It's not a localized din that relates to this shame karban of this bialim. It's a din klali. It's a more general concept. When it comes to haktara, there's no lo mishkachas l'shem zoveach. Why? I'll explain it to you. And he says, I also saw this in the Sefer Taras HaKodesh. Go halfway down the paragraph. Last word on the line is lo yashiv. First word is different. It tells us yitachin. Dehine, be'inyan chiyav haktaras imurim. When it comes to the obligation, I'm on the word, the first word of the line is the next word line is Yeshlomar Beis Gedarim. Two definitions. Like the word house can have two meanings, the word haktara has two points. The letter Beis, first word on the line, left-hand column, paragraph va'ayin. Ha'echad du chiyuv prati shel karban. That it is a local requirement of the karban. Rotz lomar, so to speak, to commode the Torah sakarban lishchot v'lizrok shlamim o'ola, and so to midina karban. Also, you have to put it on the mizbech. You have to burn it. And the second din habez yishlomar dechiyuv prati shel karban taimu shmo haprati shlamim o'ola eino al haktara. That doesn't apply to haktara. Haktara has one element which relates to the shame karban of what you burn. And then there is another element which does not exist for the haktara because that's just a generic concept. Interestingly, you notice haktara, that could be done at night. Why do we daven Maariv at night? Because Maariv correlates to the burning of the emurim. That could be done all night. And theoretically, if you could avoid Lina, it could take place several days later if you left it on the top of the Mizbeach, according to one man to Amar. So Rav Nachum Zemba is saying that when you look at a karban, you have to look at each stage and figure out what is it accomplishing. And that when you say there's a concept called haktara, there are two dimensions. There's the haktara that relates to the shame karban, that what needs to be done to do the haktara. And then there's the haktara that doesn't relate to the bialim, that's just a generic general process that happens to all karbanos. And the nafkamina is that if you did the haktara for the wrong owner, it doesn't ruin the karban. That's this shtickel Torah from Menachem Zemba. Put it in your pocket. Take it home. It's amazing. This came up when the Kol learned Zvachim. This is an important discussion because he goes on to talk about the concept of Haktara in general. And this year we're learning Tam and Nishkat. So this comes up because in the next section he's going to talk about how Korban Pesach, the Haktara of the Korban Pesach, is different than other Haktaras. And he uses that to answer the general question, which was the introduction to this bracket. But anyway, this is just one shtickel, one insight from Rav Menachem Zemba. And Simcha Elberg is worked up because when you invoke the memory of Rav Menachem Zemba, that's a sensitive thing. So Rav Simcha Elberg, he can't imagine that Rav Menachem Zemba would encourage this revolt. And yet, turn the page. I never met Rav Simcha Elberg, and I can't speak about him, but I could just tell you that I do have this sefer, which I'm showing you. This is a small, you see, old book that someone once gifted to me, an amazing gift. The title of this book, Yoman Ghetto Varsha. This is the original 1957 Hebrew edition, published by, copyright by, Dr. Hillel Seidman. We could spend an entire morning or several weeks just talking about this incredible personality, Hillel Seidman, who was a chronicler in the ghetto. He was a knowledgeable Ben Torah who was primarily a scholar, an archivist. He was responsible for writing a contemporaneously written diary, which he describes in the Hakdama here, how this diary survived, and it survived being snatched by the Gestapo, and he was sent to the Pawiak prison and got out. It's a crazy story. And then in 1943, he ends up out of the ghetto, sent to France, where he survives there with a piece of the diary, comes back, unearths the diary that he had buried under the ghetto, publishes it after the war. Before the war, he was an incredibly busy activist. After the war, he moved to New York. He was mostly a journalist. There's more to talk about in a different time. Amazing, unusual, incredible person. In the back of this diary, he has a section. It's amazing. It's called People I Met in the Ghetto. That's what it's called. After the daily sections, he gives you brief biographical snippets of amazing people, some of whom I had heard of, and some of them I had never even heard of, but they were very significant personalities in the ghetto. The first of these personalities who he met with and had a close relationship was Rav Menachem Zemba. He says, Rav Menachem Zemba, his home, which he said he changed, has to change 5 times his apartment in the ghetto, because he was constantly needed to be on the move, was a place, a central place for us, people in the ghetto. He was one of the ghetto leaders, to gather and get together. He said, Rav Menachem Zemba, he said, the suffering and the tragedies did not break him. He continued in the midst of this, what he calls a Yam HaSo'er, this cauldron that was bubbling. He says he was Nitzav Chazak. He said he didn't stop learning. His mouth, Lo Posak Puma Migirso, even July, September 1942, when the great deportations took place. Bimecharish Chidushei Torah. He had a series of yeshiva bachrim who were learning in sewers and bunkers, and he would go visit them one at a time to give them chizuk and bechinas. Could you imagine? He describes, he says, I remember Sukkot 1942, which we're going to come back to in a little bit, that Rav Menachem Zemba, with great danger, busted open, he was at the apartment at the top floor, he busted open the roof. Why? So there would be wood slats for a sukkah. And he says, this tiny little sukkah, he says, hundreds of people came passing through just to be in the sukkah of Rav Menachem Zemba. He says, Erev Sukkos, Hillel Seidman writes, he says, I got 3 esrogim from Switzerland, and immediately, obviously, I brought them to right away to Rav Menachem Zemba. Rav Menachem Zemba, the Gaon Avir, who was still there in the ghetto uprising and was gunned down on Shabbos Chol HaMoed in 1943. Here's the entry date. Thursday, 14th of January, 1943. Hillel Seidman describes a meeting. And at this meeting, there were several ghetto leaders. They were discussing the issue of revolt. Dr. Schieffer was there, Dr. Edmund Stein, several Rabbanim, including Rav Menachem Zemba. You have the Xerox on your page. He says, I mentioned at the beginning of the Great Deportations, this is Hillel Seidman speaking, the idea that maybe we should light the ghetto on fire and everyone should try to run. But in the end, it didn't happen. The conversation continues. What's that? So I gave you the whole piece all the way until, go to the next page. Go to page 5. I gave you the whole thing just so you can read the background. We're not going to take the time now. Oz Amar Rav Menachem Zemba beKovid Rosh. Said Rav Menachem Zemba with great seriousness. Yesh drachim shonos l'kiddush Hashem. There are different approaches to sanctifying the name of God. Ilu hichrichu chayom es hayudim l'shmad. If they would force Jews to convert today, then v'efshar haya lehinotza ayidei hishtamdus. Maybe some people would be able to save themselves through shmad. Right? That would be a theoretical option. Kamo b'svarad o b'shaz k'zeres tatnu, like it was in the Crusades. Ha'isam isosenu, then were we to die, kishala atzma b'chinas kiddush Hashem. Harambam omer afilu shebishah sheyehudi nerag mishum yehudi ariza bilvad kiddush Hashem. He quotes in the Rambam, and there's a whole paragraph, a whole chapter in the biography of Menachem Zemba dealing with his analysis of Kiddush Hashem. He says, a person who dies because they're a Jew is also a Kiddush Hashem. V'halocha kamoso. Ach kayom azeh. Today, says Rav Menachem Zemba, haderech hayechida l'kadosh Hashem, the way, and he says it, the only way, the way, haderech hayechida l'kadosh Hashem, he hisnagdus mizuyenes befoal, is armed resistance actively. Says Hillel Simon, hakol makshiva mitoch yiras hakavod. Everybody was listening out of yiras hakavod from the Gon Rav Menachem Zemba, ledvar of shalagon, dum yakveida uteves asanochichim. Heavy silence descended. And it wasn't just then. You see on the bottom, you see this is the copy of Hatzofer, the newspaper published in Israel in Wednesday, October 9th, 1946, right before Sukkot. So if you look on the next page, you actually have the Xerox copy of an interview, recollections that were written up by this man by the name of Leibish Feingold, or Ari Leib Feingold. Sukkot, Tufshin Gimel, Eitzel Rav Menachem Zemba. He says, I gave you the whole article here, I was that fateful Sukkot 1942 together with Rav Menachem Zemba in the ghetto. I went to his house. I'll tell you the people who were there. And what did he tell us? He told us that we need to resist. Nizdaza Begufo. He says, this is a different kind of Kiddush Hashem today. Go to the last column in the top section, the last four words. He says the same concept that he explained to Hillel Seidman. He says, at the time, B'shah shenitna efsharus liyudi lios lo yudi daya lo l'kaddish es Hashem b'zeh b'vachu yudi. When a person had a choice, convert or die, so then their death was the Kiddush Hashem. Kach Acheres, now to the second section. This is on the first chunk you see is on page 3 of the newspaper. This last piece on the bottom is on page 6. Elelios Yudi, Kishain Toeles, Bahamaras Hadas. But when there's no point in converting, because the Germans are going to kill everyone anyway. Kishain Breira, Acheres, Ozari Harigosal Yudi, Hinu Yudi, Ein Bamishum, Kiddush Hashem, Hayom, Ein Kiddush Hashem, Ela Bemerid Mizuyan. Today, a Kiddush Hashem needs a revolt. Active resistance. This is what Rav Menachem Zemba said to the people. We have testimony, first-hand testimony. And as difficult as it was for someone who knew Rav Menachem Zemba before the war, but he didn't see what they had gone through, what they were experiencing, what Rav Menachem Zemba had seen and felt, b'bsaro echzeh, to understand this debate, to understand it from a halachic standpoint, from a Jewish law standpoint. There was, and we don't have time for it today, there was a very, very fascinating Jew, religious Jew, lived in the Vilna ghetto. Let's go from Warsaw to Vilna for a ghetto, for a minute. He wrote a diary. It was published in the 1950s. They have a copy of it at Spertus. I was able to get a hold of it at one point. His name was Zelig Kalmanovich, Shem Yikom Damo. Zelig Kalmanovich writes in his diary, toward the end of the diary, about the debates that raged internally. among many people, including the religious people. Should we stand up and fight and face certain death at the hands of the Germans who had all the weapons? Or should we try to survive another day? Maybe Hashem will bring us the Yeshua tomorrow. Maybe the Russians will win tomorrow. Maybe we'll outlive this horror. The debate went back and forth, back and forth. This was the same debate that was going on within the Chabura of Rav Nachum Zemba and Hillel Seidman and the other leaders in the Warsaw Ghetto. Not Pashut. There was a very important Rav. He later moved to Petach Tikva. His name was Rav Yeshua Moshe Aronson, Zichrono Levracha. He was a survivor. He was in Auschwitz for a brief period of time, and he was also in a work camp called Kunin. And he describes that there was a group of people in their camp who were getting together a couple of whatever they had, whatever they could get their hands on, and they were going to have a revolt. And he describes in the passage how he, as a big Talmud Chacham, as a Rav, thought that this would be worthwhile, even though they were going to face certain death at the hands of the Germans, but maybe some of them could escape. Because otherwise, he said, they were going to face certain death anyway. He says at the end, it didn't work out. They didn't end up revolting for a set of circumstances that was particular to that case. But the debate, the question, it was a live issue. It wasn't so pashut. And according to this first-hand testimony from Hillel Seidman and from this other survivor, Leib Feingold, Rav Menachem Zemba encouraged armed resistance. There's a scholar I recently put out an article about this debate. And the truth is, I wasn't even aware of this. Because Simcha Elberg, in the article here in Ela Ezkara, says, if you want to know more about Rav Menachem Zemba, look at the biography. Well, in the biography of Rav Menachem Zemba, he quotes from Hillel Seidman and tells the whole story about the armed resistance. It was only a couple of years ago, it's the third week in a row that we're mentioning, Dr. Lyman Schneer mentioned to me, he said, you know, there's some controversy about that. It is a controversy. And there are those who deny that Rav Menachem Zemba supported the armed resistance. Well, why was this a controversy? And this is what we're going to conclude with to put it in some historical context. If you take a look on the next page, we have the title page of a fascinating and important article by my teacher, Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter. Rabbi Schachter's article, this is Tradition 2008, Holocaust Commemoration and Tisha B'Av, the debate over Yom HaShoah. It's an excellent, important, fundamental article dealing with the different perspectives in Israel and around the world as to whether or not the Jewish state should establish Yom HaShoah, a separate day for marking the Holocaust. Should the Holocaust be commemorated within the context of Tisha B'Av? Should it have its own day? Not its own day. Lots of discussion in rabbinic circles. One of the many issues that Rabbi Schachter mentions in this article has to do with how Yom HaShoah was founded. The messaging around Yom HaShoah. Because let's think about the context. The nascent state of Israel, a tremendous gift, L'mayla min ha-teva from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it was celebrated by people in the Medina, in the Yishuv, who were trying to show the image of the strong, proud, stand-up, self-made Jews, pioneers, builders of the land. And the image, lo aleinu, of Yishuv Hayashan, of old European Jews, led like lambs to the slaughter, which is the phrase that's sometimes used, and perhaps pejoratively so, it's not necessarily congruous. So it's interesting that when you look at the history, take a look on the next page. One of the incredible gifts that you have today with the internet is that you can go online from anywhere and you can actually see the conversations that took place in every session of the Knesset. So the last bunch of pages in your packet is the official transcript of the Knesset. The first section here you see is from the 12th of April, 1951. The first chukim I don't want to deal with. That's not for us today. Bottom, Hachlata b'dvar kviat, the decision regarding the establishment of Yom HaShoah u'mered hagita'ot. Yom HaShoah u'mered hagita'ot, the day of the Holocaust and the uprising of the ghettos. So, how are we characterizing the Jewish state's recognition of the Holocaust? The Holocaust Day and Ghetto Uprising. Interesting. This is page A and B. Let's go to page D. That's A, B, and C. That's the conversation. Go to page D. Who is still speaking in the Knesset? We're now June 18th, 1958. The same Yosef Rosh Shprintzak. Who is speaking? Mordechai Nurak. He was the same one who spoke in 1951, same in 1958, a parliamentarian, a member of the Knesset on behalf of the Maftal, the religious Zionist community. The religious Zionist, this Rav Mordechai Nurak, was a Holocaust survivor. He was a Rav before the war. He was a member of the Zionist enterprise. He lost his wife and two children, two daughters, I think he had, who were killed in the war. Survives, comes to Israel in 1947, becomes a member of the Knesset. He's speaking. He is the one who calls for the moment of silence to remember Rav Menachem Zemba. This is the official record. Go over to page E of the Knesset, standing for a moment of silence for Rav Menachem Zemba's memory. But now, go to page F. In favor. They voted in favor. But now go to page F. Because there's a change. And this is subtle, but very significant. I put the full transcript so that you can read them, because you can realize when you listen to the words that there is a sensitivity that we're talking about here. Because now there is a new formulation of this law. Now we are in 1959. Chok Yom HaZikaron L'Shoah V'Ligvura. A new name. Do you notice the difference? In 1953, they instituted the law of Holocaust Memorial and the establishment of Yad Vashem. But it took till 1959 till they changed the name of the law of what we call Yom HaShoah, of the formal observance. Why did they change the name? Because the original name was Yom HaShoah U'mered Hagita'ot. The implication was that, you know what we need to remember? We need to remember the destruction, the Shoah, and those who fought back. By 1959, people start to realize that's not the only form of heroism. The people who resisted spiritually, morally, those also are Kedoshim. So the law now has a new name. Yom HaShoah is no longer Yom HaShoah U'mered Hagita'ot. It's now Yom HaZikaron L'Shoah V'Ligvura. In whatever form that takes, that heroism. And if you look on the next page, this is a long speech from Boruch Ozniah, from the Yoshev Rosh Vadat HaKnesset. In the bottom, we're not going to read it inside because we're out of time. He says there are two parts to resistance. There are two elements. There is the remembrance of those spiritual resistors, those who died al Kiddush Hashem because of who they were. And there is also the gevura of those who fought back. But it's not one or the other. It's both. Shoah v'hagvura. Now we understand why there were people who would not accept that Rav Menachem Zemba was being pulled into a narrative that was overemphasizing the Mered Hagita'ot. There was pushback. What we could take away from this, number one, is an opportunity to think about the great Gaon and the Chassid, the Tzaddik, the great genius Rav Menachem Zemba, but also to understand that just because Hillel Seidman says that Rav Menachem Zemba encouraged armed revolt, it doesn't invalidate the approach of others. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Both the active armed resistance, which by the way was also encouraged by another Rebbe, the Radzina Rebbe at the time, and the approach of let's stay true to who we are, the spiritual resistance, these are both true. It could be that maybe Rabbi Nachum Zemba changed his mind over time, maybe he didn't, we don't know. But to understand that both can be valid, and that yes, Rabbi Nachum Zemba supported armed resistance, but yes, there were other great tzaddikim and great rebbes like the Piasetzner, who we do not know if they supported the armed resistance. But both need to be remembered. Both need to be celebrated. Both need to be valued. It's not one or the other. It's elu ve'elu. Both of these are forms of Kiddush Hashem. And that is the ultimate expression which is being manifest in the new formulation of the law of this Knesset, of the Yom HaShoah v'Hagvura. What is Gvura? Different kinds. Kovish is Yitzro, Ezu Gibor, Kovish is Yitzro, Ezu Gibor. Maybe it's the Gibor, like Shimshon HaGibor. Maybe it's all different kinds of Gvura. But it's not one style. And now we can understand a little better of why this was such a controversy in the late 1950s surrounding this great personality, Rabbi Nachum Zemba. Shem Yikom Tov, Mizkus Galena.